Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
I think this is going to be the longest 5-minute reality check that I've ever recorded. You know, I don't plan it that way. It's just I have so many things to talk to you about this week. So let's get started. The title of this podcast is going to be What is Really Bugging the Banks? But before I get to that, let's talk a bit about the stock market. If you just look at the surface, the stock market is having a good start to 2023. However, it's really just a handful of stocks that are doing well. Amazon, Microsoft, Google, or Alphabet, Facebook, or Meta is where all the money is hiding. For example, Amazon reported earnings last week. It is trading at 84 times forward earnings, which means earnings that'll never happen. But its revenue growth is just 9% year over year. 84 times forward earnings with revenue growth of just 9%. That of, you know, maybe a little better than a utility. The S&P 500 is up a little bit less than 7% but for the year. But 8 stocks are keeping the average from being negative on the year. The mega cap names control all the averages because they're cap weighted averages, most of them, except for the Dow. It's a price weighted index. Amazon and Microsoft are up around 25% this year, year to date. Facebook is up about 100% year to date. And Amazon and Microsoft, those two stocks alone make up 14% of the entire S&P 500 index. That's how concentrated the index has become, just a handful of names. But before you suffer from too much FOMO, fear of missing out, I'm missing out on the rally. Year over year, Amazon is down 17% and Microsoft is just up 5% year over year. So nothing really to see here at all. Meanwhile, the broader averages, which is where most of the stocks hide, like the Russell 2000, are basically unchanged on the year and down 8% from the year ago period. That's the reality of where the stock market is. The mainstream financial media loves to play the beat the earnings estimate game, especially with those headline mega caps, which have been vastly lowered, so it's easy to hurdle over the bar. But there's carnage underneath the index. For examples, Pinterest fell 14%, Cloudflare plunged 25%, and Snap crashed by 18% in minutes after reporting earnings last week. But those crashes didn't really grab the headline. But if you need absolute proof of the lunacy and mania on Wall Street, just look at Intel. The company reported Q1 results last week that showed a staggering 133% annual reduction in earnings per share. How do you get a more than 100% reduction in earnings? You go from a positive number to a negative number. Its revenue dropped 36% year over year as well. Intel recorded a net loss of $2.8 billion for the quarter, compared with a profit of $8.1 billion last year. It was the fifth consecutive quarter of falling sales and the second consecutive quarter of earnings losses. It was also the largest quarterly loss of all time for the company's history. And yet, despite this disastrous, disgusting performance for a stock, Intel has a forward PE ratio of 61 times. The stock is up 15% year to date and jumped 5% the day of its earnings release, just because CEO Pat Gelsinger made some optimistic comments about a second half 2023 recovery during his conference call. Maybe he mentioned AI in the conference call. Such irrational behavior can only be made possible by the Fed's asinine $4.5 trillion post-COVID money printing spree. That is the preamble to the podcast. Now, back to the main reason for recording this podcast for you today. At today's FOMC press conference, Mr. Powell tried his hand at stand-up comedy by saying, quote, banking conditions have broadly improved since March, close quote. Could it really be possible that he could be so blind to what is actually happening within the banking system? Really? A banking system can only function properly when certain parameters are in place. Banks need to pay depositors a rate that is close to what they can receive from short-term treasuries, and that interest rate should also be above the rate of inflation. Most importantly, the rate paid on banks' liabilities, which are their deposits, need to be below the rate it receives on its loans or its assets. A steep yield curve where short-term rates are several hundred basis points below long-term rates is conducive for a healthy and happy banking system to exist. In this scenario, in that healthy scenario, deposits are sticky because there's no motivation to leave the banking system for the relative safety of money market funds and T-bills. And banks can easily turn a profit due to the positive sloping yield curve. The situation we have today is the exact opposite. Banks are now paying depositors far below what they can receive from a risk-free short-term treasury bill. And that rate is nowhere near the increase in the consumer price index. The risk of bank runs increase when the deposit rate cannot compete with that of inflation and the rate offered on T-bills. It just does not make any financial sense whatsoever at all to keep your money in a place where the risk is greater, a bank, and the reward is far less than you can get from a treasury. Case in point, the FDIC placed First Republic Bank on receivership last Friday. It is the fourth such bank since early March to fail. The list so far, hit parade, goes like this. Silvergate Bank, First Republic Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, and Signature Bank. Now, these are not insignificant financial institutions, excluding Silvergate. They were the second, third, and fourth largest bank failures in history. The deposits and assets of the erstwhile FRB Bank, First Republic Bank, were sold to none other than the fortunate Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan. Of course, the shareholders get wiped out, but J.P. Morgan gets their assets for dimes on the dollar, and the deal comes with a government backstop on some of their potential losses as an added incentive. I'm sure there's nothing to see here, though. These collapses are just aberrations, right, Mr. Powell? One-offs, two-offs, or three-offs, or four-offs. Because conditions have broadly improved, right? So just buy stocks, right, Mr. Cramer? But please indulge me while I inject some reality into the evaluation. Do you want to know what is really plaguing the entire banking system? It's actually very simple and easy to understand once you open your mind to the simple truth. A plethora of high-risk loans were made when money was virtually free during 10 of the last 14 years. This secular system of free money led to a 40-year high in the rate of inflation. CPI at over four times the Fed's target compelled Mr. Powell to jack up interest rates by over 500 basis points in just over 1 year. Hence, bank assets and the income stream they provide are worth far less than T-bills. That's the problem. For example, one of banks' largest assets are mortgages. The Fed pushed the overnight interbank lending rate to the floor, and then that wasn't enough. They thought it was a good idea to buy $2.6 trillion in mortgage-backed securities to push the cost for buying a home even lower, to a record low, in fact. The 30-year fixed mortgage rate was below 3% from July of 2020 through March of 2021. Rates even plunged to a record low of 2.0. This is a 30-year fixed rate, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. a mortgage, a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, a record low of 2.65% by early 2021. And 30-year fixed rate mortgages have been below the current effective Fed funds rate of just over 5% since May of 2010. I'm going to repeat that just in case you didn't pay attention to that. 30-year mortgages, that rate on those mortgages have been below the current effective funds rate that is just over 5% now since May of 2010. This was not an issue for banks as long as inflation remained quiescent and both the effective Fed funds rate and T-bill rates were near 0%. But that all changed when the CPI soared to 9% by the summer of 2022, and the risk-free rate on short-term government debt climbed to match that of the Fed funds target rate of 5 to 5.25%. The problem is banks cannot pay depositors anything close to what they can now receive from a risk-free T-bill yield. Otherwise, they would be paying depositors more than they are currently receiving from a good percentage of their assets, and their profit margins would disappear. However, if banks don't begin to offer much better rates to their customers, liquid deposits, it will lead to yet more money fleeing the banking system, which is a drain on reserve and curbs their ability to make loans. This process serves to exacerbate the drain on reserves from the Fed's ongoing QT program. Banks are then forced to sell assets to meet liquidity requirements, which then puts further downward pressure on price of these same assets and attenuates banking reserves further, thus expediting and intensifying the recession that is already in progress. In the end, the size of the bank is irrelevant. All banks suffer under the same dynamic, even the bigger ones, just to different degrees. Banks have already significantly tightened lending standards, and now they will be forced to tighten lending practices even further due to the escalating deposit flight and by increased regulatory oversight. Of course, mortgages are not the only loans made to consumers and businesses during the Fed's zero interest rate policy regime that would face margin pressure if banks deigned to pay depositors a rate that is even close to what they can receive from T-bills. Net interest margins would shrink across the board. The deep state of Wall Street is desperately trying to convince investors that the current array of banking failures is idiosyncratic and isolated. That is the new definition of insanity. Think about it. What do you think is going to happen to banks' assets when the unemployment rate begins to rise? Or how much damage will be done to commercial mortgage-backed securities when the $2.5 trillion worth of vacant commercial real estate loans have to be refinanced? How about the $1 trillion worth of collateralized loan obligations that will falter as the economy begins to contract? In other words, we have yet to see the recession become manifest, which is so very clearly predicted by the National Federation of Independent Businesses Small Business Survey, the Index of Leading Economic Indicators, plunging money supply growth rates, the soaring net percentage of banks that are tightening lending standards, and inverted yield curves. The Fed's additional 25 basis point rate hike after the FOMC meeting for May, which occurred today, will serve to exacerbate and expedite the coming recession and put more pressure on banks. And once that economic contraction finally does arrive, we can expect the stress in the banking system to greatly intensify. The mainstream financial media is ignorant to this fact, but the regional banking index is not. The KRE, the regional banking index, is down over 40% since February 7th of this year. Now, turning to the rationale behind our current portfolio positioning. The IDEC model, the inflation deflation economic cycle model, has us in sector two, which is disinflation of the investment spectrum, which ranges between deflation in sector one and intractable inflation in sector five. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said on Monday that the U.S. will run out of money to pay all of its obligations on June 1st. This is more than 1 month sooner than expected just a few weeks ago because of a shortfall in tax receipts. This further confirms our view that the economy is slowing significantly and at a faster rate. Not raising the debt ceiling is extremely bullish for bonds because it will act as a de facto balanced budget amendment. America will have to operate on only the revenue that she collects. What a concept. That is massively deflationary and recessionary in the short term, which is rocket fuel for the bond market. And when you add in the banking crisis, currently the banking crisis, bond prices could soar yet higher. But this toxic soup isn't going to be at all kind to the stock market bubble. Hence, we remain in bond and bond proxies, and I say bonds, I mean treasuries. Gold, we have a small position in the US dollar, and we inch closer to the point where we can reshort the market. We are inching closer to that point where we can reshort the market with a more significant weighting, which would be when we land firmly in sector one, deflation and depression. It will only take a little more stress in credit spreads and financial conditions to bring us to a net short position. Please stay tuned.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.